Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature an interview with Ronnie Jones, the chairman of the Louisiana Gaming Control Board, and about how regulation in his state has changed markedly since the early days of casino gaming. Today's podcast is brought to you by GLI, staging its annual Regulators Roundtable this March 4th and 5th in Las Vegas. Visit GamingLabs.com for information and registration. The gaming industry has gone from bad to good, and much of that credit must go to Ronnie Jones, who has been chairman of the State Gaming Control Board since 2013. Before that, he was a member of the state police investigating ownership and incidents involving the riverboat gaming in the state. Jones explains the status of regulatory changes, moving the boats to land, and some interesting stories about the early days of gaming in Louisiana. He spoke with me at G2E in Las Vegas in October. Ronnie Jones, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. I'm so glad we could get together. I've been a fan of yours for a lot of years. New Orleans or Louisiana was not a very good regulatory state in the beginning, and you really turned it around. So why don't you just start with telling us what the state of gaming regulation was when you took over?
It was fairly stable. I was appointed in 2013, and it was 180 degrees from where it was when it first began.
Right.
We provided a roadmap about on how not to implement legalized
right.
gaming.
Oh, yes.
So and I was a frequent critic at the time because I was in state police, and mm-hmm. we had actually voiced our concerns about legalizing any forms
sure.
of gaming until the governor told us to shut up. And we did. So when I was appointed in 2013, I would not have taken the job had it not been a stable industry.
Yeah.
And even though I had been brought back to state police for a number of years, I was able to see that this is legitimate now. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't fighting the same battles we
right.
were in 93.
Sure.
And I saw that. I thought of myself kind of as an odd nominee for the position
mm-hmm.
Because I had been a vocal critic for many years. But when I was offered the position, I looked at it a little bit and asked some questions. And so I felt comfortable. It's stable. Spectrum just did a huge report for the state last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that the legislature will implement some of those changes. So it's stable, but there's room for growth in the industry
yeah.
in Louisiana for sure.
No question. So what is the scope of your oversight? I know there's a lot of different of gambling options in
yes.
the state. Are you overseeing all of them?
Yes. This board was created out of the mess that had been created in 93. This was recreated in 1996 by Governor Mike Foster.
Okay.
He saw that there was some dysfunction in the regulatory mm-hmm. structure, and so he created this board. And we have all legalized gambling in the state except for the lottery
mm-hmm.
and charitable gaming.
Okay.
We don't have oversight over pari-mutuel wagering,
right.
but we do regulate the slots at the track. So
okay.
so essentially, my board and I have jurisdiction over 20 casinos, and
mm-hmm.
that includes the land-based casino in the city of New Orleans,
right.
Four slots at the track facilities,
mm-hmm.
and then 15 riverboats.
Right.
Some are actually riverboats sitting in water, and we can talk about that later. In addition to that, we have about 13,000 video poker
mm-hmm.
Devices
right.
around the state in something like 1,700 different locations. Most of those are truck stop facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we regulate all of that.
Yeah.
We do so. I have a very small staff. Our structure is such that the state police does the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
They do the regulatory work. There are boots on the ground. They do suitability. They cite the violations. And then our legal representation is through the Attorney General's office.
Okay.
So I think it's a good structure
mm-hmm.
because it relies on supervision of two elected officials, the governor
right.
and the Attorney General. And so I liked what I saw when I was offered that. I knew the predecessor chairman, and we had talked a lot about what he did. And so I was I didn't have to be talked into the job,
yeah.
But I didn't say yes right away. Mm-hmm. I did a little homework.
Okay, great. How about tribal gaming? I know the tribes have their own commissions.
There are three full casinos, mm-hmm. tribal casinos in Louisiana, and we have very limited interaction mm-hmm. with them.
Okay.
It was interesting, after I was appointed, the state police superintendent and I flew to each of the of the different locations mm-hmm. and met with the gaming operator and members of the tribal commissions. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, we're better now, but there was a little bit of suspicion on. It's like,
of course,
what's
right.
he doing here?
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to assert, you know, we're a sovereign.
Sure.
I understand all
right.
that. I get that. I'm not here to intrude. I'm not here to mm-hmm. try to figure out how much money you're making.
Right.
They don't share that with us.
They don't, no.
And they don't have to.
Right.
But I want to be able to call them if there's an issue and mm-hmm. talk. So we've got a good relationship with them, but we have very limited responsibility with respect to their regulation. They do have a relationship with state police.
Mm-hmm.
They pay state police to do some on-site things for them. They reimburse state police for those. But the board has very little interaction with the tribes.
Okay, great. So you just mentioned before we started here that you had breakfast with Jay Snowden this morning, the president of Penn National Gaming.
Yes.
What's your relationship with the other operators in Louisiana?
I think I've got a very good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
When I was chairing the Riverboat Gaming Task Force, we had every CEO that had a property licensed in Louisiana appear before the board. And I attribute that to the to my efforts to establish a personal relationship with these
mm-hmm.
guys. I've got all their mobile numbers. They have mine.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk every week, but I do have a great relationship with the general managers of all the casinos in Louisiana, and
okay.
I visit them regularly. I walk the most times. I'll set something up. I'll say I'll be at the property at 2. We'll have a cup of coffee that I buy for them,
mm-hmm.
And then we'll walk around. I'll find out, you know, what development plans they might have,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's going on with your hiring, what's going
right.
on with your minority procurement. So through those relationships with the general managers, the regional vice presidents, I know them all. I can reach out to them if there's a problem. They can do the same with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then right up the ladder, I know
yeah.
the CEOs and the CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
So I work hard at it because I think it's important
sure.
to have that dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the enlightened regulation that we always applaud, you know, and I'm from New Jersey, so I know the good and the bad, and it has never been as good as when Dave Rebuck has
yes.
been there,
yes.
and it's never been as bad as some of the early commissioners. But you know, Dave takes that same attitude that you got to work with the industry.
Yes.
It's to your benefit to make it a healthy, prosperous industry.
Yes, and one of the first things that I did after I was appointed. I reached out to the American Gaming Association.
Right.
Jeff was there at the time,
mm-hmm.
and I just called him
yeah.
one day and got him to call me back. I said, I'm the new chairman in Louisiana. I'm trying to learn a little bit about the industry, and mm-hmm. I would like to come visit and meet your staff.
Right.
And that was beneficial. And those relationships I have sustained in the last 6 years.
Right.
I just left one of their functions upstairs here at G2E.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember at a meeting I had with some of my co-regulators, a couple of them said, why are you meeting with those guys? That's the
yeah.
industry.
Yeah.
Well, heck, I mean, how do you regulate an industry
exactly.
without having some dialogue? Well, I find that there are more areas of agreement
mm-hmm.
that I have with the industry
right.
than disagreement.
Right.
And it's okay to disagree.
Sure.
You know, they're a business. I expect them to push me in, trying to push me in certain directions.
Right.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But they're not always going to get what they want.
Right.
But I think we have to be able to communicate and have dialogue and I appreciate that open relationship.
Right.
When I met with Anthony Sanfilippo
right.
when I first was appointed, and we had breakfast, and you know, they brought the tab, and I said, you know, I'm going to pay,
yeah.
and I told Anthony that I don't want to insult you by doing that,
sure.
and I would never, you know, suppose that buying me breakfast would get me to support
right.
something
yeah,
you're
yeah,
doing.
Right, yeah.
But it's just an ethical thing for
Absolutely,
me.
Yeah.
And he said, I understand it. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some states I could never even have breakfast with the regulator.
Sure, right, yeah. No, I think your job is to maintain integrity and to have transparent regulations.
Yes.
Anytime there's something, you know, odd going on, and, you know, all you have to do is call the operator up and say what's going on. And
that's exactly correct.
As long as you're transparent, as long as you have the mutual trust, I think that's healthy for the industry.
And I think that's how you establish it. I
right.
mean, you establish it by visiting with people and talking to them, sending them emails, responding when they have questions. we try and be as absolutely transparent as we can. Mm-hmm. All of our monthly meetings are live streamed on the web.
Right.
They're archived on the legislative website. Mm-hmm. We put all the documents, the transcripts of the meetings are available on our website. Everything is out there. There's very little that's not shared except that which is protected by law, some of the financial information,
of course, right.
And those things. But everything else is out there, including the administrative hearings.
Yeah. And that was, again, that was very unusual in the early days of Louisiana when you didn't figure, you know who's getting that riverboat site. And
you never knew exactly what was going on in Louisiana. And that included in-state police who was trying to figure out how to regulate.
Yeah,
I mean, we were, in the early days, we were part of the problem. I get that. I acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. So there's a move now to, I don't know if they've approved this yet, but to move the riverboats to land. Has that been approved?
So one of the things that I noticed when I was appointed in 2013 in visiting the properties, that some are still first-generation riverboats.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The law required that they have a paddle wheel.
Right.
We have some newer properties that are sort of more transitional. They're not on land, but they're in cofferdams, things like that.
Right.
And then we have four resort properties that you would never know that they meet the legal definition of a riverboat. The Golden Nugget, Tilman Fertitta's Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. In the middle of this huge casino, you go behind this steel door, and there's a paddle wheel and a little pool of water. And you have to be able to turn it on. This 5-horsepower motor would turn the paddle wheel. So that got my attention. It's like we're 25 years into this industry. And we're still requiring things that most other states don't require.
Right.
We weren't exactly the last state to deal with the issue of getting boats out of the water, but we're one of the last states. So what I proposed to Senator Ronnie Johns, who's from the Lake Charles area, I said, why don't you create a task force? Let's appoint, the appropriate people to it, the House, the Senate, the governor's office, industry representatives, state police, the attorney general, all the stakeholders. And let's hold hearings over the next 18 months. Let's take testimony from everybody. Let's establish a record. Let's come up with recommendations for legislation, and then it'll be up to you to try and get them passed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do many things right, but I think we did that right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We had some great hearings, and we had some great testimony. And, Tilman Fertitta came in. Every CEO came in, of course. They had a wish list. They each had, 25 things they wanted the state to do.
Right.
I get that. When it came to the end, we considered all the recommendations, but we considered them in the context of what can we recommend that we believe we have a reasonable expectation of passing.
Yeah.
So we came up with permitting them to move on to land,
mm-hmm.
provided they make an economic investment.
Right.
All right. Secondly, they can do it with their paddle wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And let's redefine gaming space not based on square footage, as they did with the riverboats,
mm-hmm.
but rather let's do it based on number of gaming positions. There was a fourth recommendation that we believed in, but we did not think it would get traction, and we didn't want to tie it to the other recommendations. And that's with how the state taxes complementary items, because Mississippi doesn't do that.
Right, sure.
Competitively, that's a disadvantage for Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps I'm naive. I'm the eternal optimist, even in the face of darkness. And I just thought it was not going to be a heavy lift.
Right.
I just thought this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
The bill sailed out of committee on the Senate side without any issue.
Mm-hmm.
It got to the Senate floor. I happened to be at a gaming meeting in Washington, D.C., and I scurried back to my room at the Hilton and turned the computer on because I knew it was coming up on the Senate floor.
Right.
I was blown away by some of the things that were said during the debate.
Mm-hmm.
A senator from north part of the state got up and railed about, there's a deduct box. You go to every casino and there's a box that you put the deed in. It's the deed box. And, I've been in every casino.
Sure.
I've never seen the deed box.
No,
but he believes that people bring their house to their deed to the house and they lose the house.
Mm-hmm.
I respect the opinion if they have, an opinion that morally this isn't the right thing to do. If they have objections, I understand that.
Course,
I respect it. But let's be honest in the debate.
Yeah.
And it made it out of the Senate without a vote to spare and headed to the House.
Yeah.
It made it through House committee. I was a little bit worried about the the House floor. Mm-hmm. The debate was just as rancorous.
Yeah.
There were attempts to amend the bill, 15 different amendments they wanted to put on it,
right,
to try and kill it, mm-hmm, not to help
right
it, to kill it.
Yeah.
But we got it out. The governor signed it. There are at least two properties in Louisiana who are making making plans to move on to land.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the plans of one of them.
Right.
The board did not set a bright line like you have to invest $100 million to get approved,
mm-hmm,
because we're going to look at what's reasonable for that area of the state. But this was not and is not about just putting up a temporary building on land and moving the slot machines into it.
Right.
This is about creating entertainment venues with amenities. You know, are you going to have a pool?
Course,
are you
going to
have
right
a spa, a mm-hmm health club, hotel,
right,
retail? What, you know, you're going to have a place for entertainment, conventions, conferences. That's what we're looking for.
Sure.
If you look at the Nevada model, more money is made out here now, mm-hmm, from non-gaming.
Right.
You know, the non-gaming revenue surpassing gaming revenue.
Right.
So, yeah, you're going to have a casino, but what other reason do you have to bring people to that property?
Right.
And that's been my sermon since it passed. And
right,
I believe that by the time I leave this position, if I'm fortunate enough to serve another 6 years, that by the time I leave, there will be more than two properties who've moved on to land.
Yeah.
Some aren't going to do that. You have four resort
sure
properties,
right,
the two LaBerge properties, mm-hmm, one in Baton Rouge, one in Lake Charles. You have Golden Nugget, and you have Margaritaville. They're not likely to reinvest.
No.
And they didn't
and they've
get
already got a lot
yeah
of them,
yeah. I mean, they didn't get a lot out of that bill. So we came back later and changed a rule that permits them to move some of their gaming devices off the barge,
right, mm-hmm,
the definition of
right
the boat.
Right.
That, all right. So the Golden Nugget, for example, now has gaming positions out by their swimming pool.
Mm-hmm, right.
They have moved some gaming positions into the Blue Martini, which
mm-hmm
is one of their upscale
right
lounges. And the others will do that as, you know, as time goes on. So there was a little bit of something in there for everybody.
Sure, sure. You mentioned the paddle wheels. I remember when they opened LaBerge in Lake Charles, I was interviewing Dan Lee, and we were up on the top floor, and he goes, see that little house there on top of the casino? Yeah, what's that? He goes, that's the pilot's house.
I said,
what?
Yes.
I said, that's not going to move. He goes, no, it's not going anywhere. But,
well, you know,
but they
when,
were required to have a pilot
that's
house
right. And if it's a boat, you have to have a staff.
Right,
and you
yeah
have maritime
exactly
regulations
right
you have to
yep
follow. I mean,
oh, yeah. He was telling me that instead of they had to build the slot bases with metal and not with wood because
yes
wood burns, and that you can't have that on a boat.
I mean, it was a lot of the legislators did not even realize that.
Right.
Prior to us making our recommendation, I took a delegation. I took Senator Ronnie Johns, Senator Danny Martini, Senator Smith, and took them to Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to do a couple of things.
Sure.
I wanted to go by GLI and look mm-hmm at the technology. I wanted
right
to take them by and meet Dave Rebuck and his staff
right
and hear how New Jersey does things. Let them see the map of mobile applications
right
for mobile betting.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted them to see the boardwalk. I wanted to, you know, wanted to see the Bayside properties.
Right.
We stayed
mm-hmm
the Bayside.
Yep.
But I wanted them to see what downtown Atlantic City had become.
Right.
To make a point that if you don't let these people reinvest, if the laws aren't sufficient to make this a profitable industry, then these are bad things can happen.
Yeah.
And they all got it.
Yeah, no question about that.
Our sponsor this week is GLI, staging its annual North American Regulators Roundtable. The event takes place March 4th and 5th at the Tropicana in Las Vegas. GLI's Roundtable is a two-day educational conference that provides attendees with the opportunity to participate in high-level discussions with industry thought leaders and peers. Registration for GLI's Regulators Roundtable is open now. For information and registration, visit GamingLabs.com and catch the vision for 2020. Now back to our interview.
Let's talk about Howard's New Orleans for a minute. This is the only land-based property
yes
in Louisiana.
Yes.
And they were under all kinds of strange strictures as well. Has that been relaxed at all?
So
I know they just re-upped there for another contract.
Yes,
another 25
yeah,
year
and
contract.
That was and that crashed and burned the first time.
Yeah, right.
Because a local
right
developer didn't believe the city was getting its best best deal.
Right.
And key to that discussion was Senator John Lario, who was president of the Senate. And at the 11th hour, things began to unravel based on some reporting by Tyler Bridges, who wrote the book Bad Bet on the Bayou, which everybody should read. And so Dan Reel, the general manager, came mm-hmm back the second year, and Dan does an incredible job of managing the politics of the state and the city.
Right.
which is tough to navigate.
It is tough, yeah.
The city of New Orleans, where I live, mm-hmm. I can say this, it's a tough place to do business.
Yeah.
The politics in that city are they're bare-knuckle politics.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot to overcome, but he spent the following year working out what he thought was the best deal. And what he wanted out of it, in exchange for re-upping their contract, a few years early, he was going to Caesars is going to invest $350 million in non-gaming cash.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to build a new hotel tower.
Right.
They're going to put new restaurants in.
Mm-hmm.
They've just added the Fillmore, an
right.
entertainment venue.
Right, it's up on the second level.
Yes,
yeah.
up on the second. Mm-hmm. It will blow you away. That
yeah.
place, it was done in great New Orleans fashion.
Mm-hmm.
They fill it up with great talent. That piece of property is you can't put a price on it.
Right.
You're midway between the convention center
mm-hmm.
and the French Quarter.
Right.
You're at the foot of Canal Street, sandwiched between Canal Street and Poydras. It should be the epicenter of entertainment for that city.
Right.
And I don't think that the city has really permitted Caesars at the time
mm-hmm.
to do what they need to the property to really thrive.
Right.
Dan Reel was giving thousands of room nights away.
Right.
He was having to send those people to other Harrah's properties
right.
or other Caesars properties
mm-hmm.
because he didn't have the room for them.
Right.
And that's
sure.
people who wanted to come to New Orleans.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was trying to help the city understand is they don't just come to gamble.
Right.
If somebody flies here from Seattle, they're going to eat here. They're going to drink here. They're going to go to shows here. There's a lot of indirect revenue
right.
that casino brings to the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about the gamble.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Like when they first developed the hotel, the casino. It was, don't have a hotel. You don't want to hurt our existing hotels.
Edwin Edwards, bless his heart, brought us that casino.
Right.
And I'll share a story with you that most people don't know. It's an Edwin Edwards story. But
there's a lot of Edwin Edwards.
There's
stories,
an
right?
and I have some.
Yeah.
So. We had done – I was a captain of the state police at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was over all the legislation. I was a public affairs officer. So a reporter had wanted to do a story about video poker just getting up and running. What's the potential for organized crime infiltration? Well, we already knew that there were some people from New York and New Jersey trying to get a straw man license in Louisiana. We
right.
couldn't share that with them.
Mm-hmm.
But the head of gaming at the time and I agreed to do a report and said, we're very concerned about that.
Yeah.
You know, we need to start this the right way. We
mm-hmm.
have to make sure we, you know, people get properly, you know, background and suitability.
Right.
So we did the interview and I waited. When are they going to run the story?
Yeah.
Well, on the day that Edwin Edwards' bill for a land-based casino was coming up for a final vote in the Senate, story appeared on the front page of the Morning Advocate, state police, colon, organized crime already moving into gaming. So, I get to the office early at 7 in the morning. By 8, the colonel's there. My phone rings. He says, walk over here. So I walk to the colonel's office. He said, hold on. He closed the door, speed dial, put it on speaker. Okay, he's in here. And it was Edwin Edwards.
Yeah.
And he gave us a ration.
I'll bet.
He
yeah.
accused us of trying to undermine, and we had nothing to do with that.
Sure.
I mean, when we talked about video poker, we didn't know, A, when his bill was going to come up.
Right.
And, we had other fish to fry. That
sure.
that wasn't our deal.
Right.
But he said, there's no such thing as organized crime, and y'all don't know anything about it. If you know anything about it, you give it to the federal authorities. Well, within a month, we culminated a joint operation with the FBI called Operation Hard Crust,
mm-hmm.
and 17, it was the hangers-on from the old Marcella family,
right, sure.
who had joined with some people out of New York,
right.
and we had them under surveillance in a restaurant and deli in the French Quarter,
right.
and I'm telling you, literally, three of the people who were arrested were so old, they were handcuffed to their walkers
yeah.
when they brought them into the jail.
Right.
And I always wanted to cut out an article about that and send it to
right.
the governor, but it's like,
yeah.
no, just he reads the same paper I do.
Right, right. Well, the same thing happened in New Jersey when casino gambling
yes.
first started. It was
yes.
the remnants of the Bruno family from Philadelphia and,
yes.
and Nicky Scarfo in Atlantic City, and they never got their hands onto any casino stuff. The closest they came was a laundry service, that they ran. They wanted to get a license it was crazy.
And it's ironic because just after gambling was authorized in Atlantic City, the following year, Edwin Edwards is on his second term. he sent me and someone from intelligence, once you go to Atlantic City, talk to the officials up there, see what impact there is on the community, organize, on crime, right. You know. So we came back and did a report. I'll never forget this. I drafted the report, wrote it for the colonel's signature, and did a cover page for him. The first line of the report read something like this. Generally speaking, law enforcement can never feel comfortable about legalizing gambling mm-hmm. because of the potential risk. So we're headed to the governor's mansion, the superintendent and I, and he opens it up, gets past the cover letter, and reads that first page, and he just ripped it out. He just ripped out the first page. I said, what'd you do that for? I said, you can't say that. He's not going to accept that. And so, my experience in Louisiana on the state police side was early exposure sure. to gaming. And our right. position had always been, this is a bad thing for the state, mm-hmm. Until Buddy Romer came along and he saw that it wasn't such a bad thing and you guys are going to regulate it.
Yeah.
And that's how we ended up with it.
Well, they'll force you to do it one way or the other, right?
I get it.
So almost sports betting last year, but not quite. Where are we with that? And I know you can't advocate one way or the other.
That's correct.
But I want to talk about how are you prepared to regulate it if it goes.
Oh, through? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my staff and I have been attending every sports betting forum that's mm-hmm. been conducted. We basically copied a lot of what New Jersey had in terms mm-hmm. of the rules. Mississippi, Allen's been very gracious about helping us. So we were ready with rule development, promulgation.
Yeah.
We knew that it was going to be a close vote, mm-hmm. but we did not anticipate that it was going to crash and burn the way it did.
Yeah.
It was really surprising. Mm-hmm. I had a Wall Street Journal reporter call me a couple of months ago, and she said, look, I'm trying to get my head wrapped around the fact that Louisiana has virtually, you can bet on just about everything in that state.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Why is it that sports betting didn't pass? And mm-hmm. and my response to her was, there's a couple of reasons. One, the legislature today is comprised of people very differently than the people who were there in 1991.
Right.
It's much more conservative. There's a lot of bias against expansion of gaming,
right.
and they saw that sports betting was an expansion.
Right.
And if it's an expansion, they're against it. And what I tried to help them understand is, we're betting today. I mean,
right.
Louisiana,
right.
most
sure.
people don't realize, Louisiana, within the last 5 years, finally outlawed betting on cockfights.
Yeah.
We were the last state. I mean, you could bet on a cockfight in
right.
Louisiana,
sure, right.
but not on the Saints, okay? So sports betting is a reality. It's going on. People are going to Mississippi. They're going online. They've got their barber who will take a bet.
Right.
I think it will come up again.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit frustrating. I shared with Jay Snowden today. Part of my frustration was by the time the bill got to a House committee, even the 20 casinos could not agree that it was a good bill.
Mm-hmm.
And if those guys can't agree that it's a good bill, you give a legislator an out because they can go, well, the industry doesn't even agree that this is a good thing.
Right.
So I've shared with every CEO that I've talked to, mm-hmm. you guys, between now and next year, need to figure out what you're going to get behind, and everybody needs to be on board.
Right.
If you want this done. We all know that sports betting is not a cash cow
right.
in terms
exactly.
of revenue.
Right.
There's risk involved for the operators.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that New Jersey has done it the right way. They have a mobile application.
Right.
But I counseled those who asked me. I said, go with brick and mortar. Go with 20 sites. Let's go conservatively mm-hmm. till the state feels more comfortable with
yeah.
it. And then we'll move to mobile.
Just as Mississippi.
If it had just yeah. gone straight to mobile,
yeah.
it wouldn't have gotten out of committee.
Right, yeah.
So we also have to understand, we have a pretty vigorous and aggressive video poker industry in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Casinos cannot contribute to campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
They can't support candidates.
Right.
Video poker can.
Mm.
And that gives them a means to help legislators who they mm-hmm. want to get elected.
Right.
And the head of the association will tell you up front, you know, we contributed this much money to the governor's campaign
right.
or the attorney general or these senators. I mean, they're not bashful about it
sure.
and they're not buying influence,
yeah.
but that puts casinos at a decided disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
And the video poker industry, by and large, was not in favor of sports betting unless you could also do it at,
yeah.
you know,
right.
the 1700 locations
right.
in Louisiana
right.
that
yeah.
they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's still the wild card then as well.
Yeah. And you know, I told my co-regulators yesterday, we were talking about sports betting. I said, look, our legislature has been called all kinds of names, but, you know, progressive and forward thinking when it comes to gambling is not something that you'll hear. Right. I mean, I suspect we'll follow maybe Guam and America Samoa in legalizing it. Yeah. We may be the last state. We will get there. I don't know if we'll get there before I leave as chairman.
Yeah.
But it would be good for the industry. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to compete with Mississippi. Arkansas has legalized it now.
Right.
I predict
Tennessee.
That before it's over with, Texas is going to be there.
Yeah. So let's talk about Texas. I mean, there's always rumors that there's going to be expansion in Texas, which would devastate, I would imagine, most of those western Louisiana casinos. Is that something you're concerned about?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Tillman Fertitta's a smart man.
Yeah.
And I don't think he would have invested in the property in Lake Charles, which is a class facility, the way he did if he reasonably expected that Texas would legalize it in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
I think long term they're going to get there.
Yeah.
But if what I read is correct, there's still an awful lot of church opposition to expansion of gambling there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you recall, but Northwest Louisiana was the hottest market for many years because they drew from that East Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth,
until
Windstar opened at the first exit in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I can start driving from downtown Dallas and be at the first exit inside of an hour, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Why drive further to Shreveport and Bossier?
Right.
When you can go they've got the largest gaming floor in the world, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been told.
I haven't been there yet.
Yes.
Yep.
And so, you know, the tribes really, they didn't undermine, but they siphoned off a lot of business out of it. I've got general managers in Shreveport and Bossier who get mailers, offers in the mail, their target, their zip code. We'll give you for a room. Come stay with us.
Yep.
And they don't know they're going to casino general managers
of course,
or competition
in
Louisiana. So a lot of the business that came from Texas now goes to Oklahoma, but there's been a shift. When Tillman built the Golden Nugget, he said, I'm not going to cannibalize this market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, LaBerge is a beautiful property.
Right.
We're going to team with them on some things, but I'm going to bring new business to this state.
Mm-hmm.
And he's good to his word.
Yeah.
He has expanded that market. That is a booming market right now.
Right.
He brings in that Beaumont, Houston, Galveston, and it's probably one of the classiest casinos that we have in the state. It's the newest
mm-hmm.
one, obviously. I mean,
right.
Margaritaville is new as well, but it is it's a premier property.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned the move to land. I've heard some suggestions that some of the riverboats in some of the more remote locations would move to land if they got a more favorable location. Is that under consideration at
all? Well, there's a process in the law for them moving the license. For example, moving Diamond Jacks tried 2 years ago to move from Bossier City mm-hmm. to Tangipahoa Parish. And I think that would have been good for Louisiana.
Right.
I think it would have been good for gaming in the state. I think mm-hmm. it would have been good for Shreveport and Bossier.
Right.
And I'm from Tangipahoa Parish.
Mm-hmm.
They had widespread support in that parish
mm-hmm.
For that as an economic development project.
Right.
But it could not overcome the legislative hurdles to even get to a vote in the parish.
Right.
The legislature said no. Three of the four senators who represent parts of that area
mm-hmm.
were opposed to it.
Mm.
And until those individuals either change their mind or change their opinion, licenses aren't going to move. They're just not going to move locations.
Okay. And I know that's owned by a pretty progressive company, Peninsula Pacific, and I know they want to move it. So I wouldn't put it past them to get it moved because
Brent is a great businessman,
mm-hmm.
and he and I also have a good relationship. I think I'm going to see him perhaps next week when he's in Louisiana for some board business.
Mm-hmm.
I think he really did not anticipate the level of opposition that he was going to face. He hired a couple of really good lobbyists,
mm-hmm.
but they couldn't get it over the goal line.
Yeah.
And he wasn't just fighting the legislators. He was up against the video poker people
who did not want
a casino to take away from any of their business.
Sure.
And remember, they can donate to campaigns.
Yep.
And he also was having to deal with Boyd. Boyd has a property in Kenner, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
right.
we don't want somebody right across the lake. We want them to drive down here and see us.
Right.
So one of the frustrating things for me as a regulator, and I've told the industry this, so it's not a secret, they sometimes create this circular firing squad. You've got video poker, you've got the horsemen, you've got Parimutuel, right. you've got the casinos, you've got the land base, you've got riverboats. There's no holistic view from the industry standpoint. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about gaming from the standpoint of everybody. What's good for the industry in Louisiana, rather than fighting with each other? I don't know that they will ever get there, but it would be helpful to the industry if they did.
Right, right. Well, Ronnie, it sounds like you still got your hands full down there with the sports betting and this expansion, moving to land type of thing. So I appreciate you stopping by, and please let's stay in touch so we can get over some of those.
Thanks for permitting me the opportunity. It's been delightful. I always enjoy talking about this. I'm still passionate about it. And,
that's obvious.
hope that I'm able to do more of this next six-year term.
Great. Well, thanks for coming by.
Absolutely.
Enjoyed this week's GGB podcast brought to you by GLI, staging its annual Regulators Roundtable this March 4th and 5th at the Tropicana in Las Vegas. Visit GamingLabs.com for information and registration. To learn more about the regulatory process in the U.S. and around the world, visit GGBMagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry on your desktop every Monday morning, subscribe to GGB News at GGBNews.com. And to attract quality players to your online poker, casino, or sports betting website, visit iGamingPlayer.com. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. And we'll see you next week on the podcast.